Do you have a tricky work problem that you need to solve? I have a great podcast recommendation for you featuring a pair of expert women. Whether you're just starting your career or a seasoned professional, check out Fixable, a podcast from TED. Hosted by Harvard professor Frances Fry and her wife, leadership coach Ann Morris, the brilliant duo provide honest, actionable advice to help you navigate everything from a gaslighting manager to returning to work after parental leave. They'll leave you feeling empowered and ready to act. Listen to Fixable wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, and welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast, episode 323. I'm your host, Emily Aries, the founder and CEO of Bossed Up. And today I'm so excited to present one of our best of Bossed Up replays. This interview with Mark Brackett still is a topic of conversation in my household all the time because, damn, does Mark Brackett make some great points, not only in this conversation, but in his incredible book, Permission to Feel. I read the book last year. I actually listened to it on Audible. And frankly, emotional intelligence and really naming that skill and working on that skill and developing that skill, I think is one of the key things that got me through the worst of the pandemic as a small business owner who was like really stressed out and extremely uncertain about just like the livelihood of my business, the ability to pay payroll, the ability to just do what we do here. Knowing what emotional intelligence was and how important it was to learn to label my emotions, regulate my emotions, I think made me a better boss. And that's why we actually brought emotional intelligence into the Level Up Leadership Accelerator. It's now an entire month-long topic. Dr. Monica Fochtman presents on emotional intelligence and just frankly, how to be a better boss. So it's so good. I can't say I'm making Brad the Boo read it right now, but I bought the book in, you know, hardcover form, put it on his nightstand and was like, we should talk about this book. Why don't we discuss it as you read it? Because we both have really different emotional communication styles. And, you know, I think talking about feelings is really important, but also can be unproductive if not done mindfully. So he's started reading it a couple months ago, and now he like constantly references Mark's book. He constantly brings it up. You know, he's in a middle manager position at his company now, which is also relatively new. In the past year, he's been managing others for the first time. So from one first-time manager to another, he and I are constantly comparing notes and talking about how emotional intelligence has influenced our leadership style. So if you want to learn more about this, join Level Up, our leadership accelerator. It's filling up now for June 1st, our start date. But B, enjoy the hell out of this conversation with Mark Brackett and pick up his book, Permission to Feel. It is one of my best, favorite, most recommended reads in the past year. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark first. Mark Brackett, PhD, is the founder and director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence and a professor in the Child Study Center of Yale University. He is the lead developer of RULER, an evidence-based approach to social and emotional learning that's been adopted by nearly 2,000 pre-K through high schools across the U.S. and in other countries. He also serves on the board of directors for the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, CASEL. And as a researcher for over 20 years, Brackett's focused on the role of emotions and emotional intelligence in learning, decision-making, creativity, relationships, health, and performance. He's published a whole bunch of scholarly articles, received a bunch of awards, speaks and consults regularly with Fortune 500 companies, and most recently, he founded the OHI Life Lab, a corporate learning firm that develops innovative digital learning systems on emotional intelligence. Brackett's mission is to educate the world about the value of emotions and the skills associated with using them widely. I am so delighted to present this conversation, which first aired last early October and is so worth bringing back in case you missed it. I can't wait to hear what you think. Mark, welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast.
I'm excited to be here.
So I have to say, I've been revisiting your fantastic book, Permission to Feel, and I was listening to the very beginning this morning on Audible when I was recalling just how troubling the statistics are around mental health and well-being, not only for children these days, but really for employees and our peers, 50% of whom are disengaged at work. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that all of those statistics were in a pre-pandemic world.
That's correct.
From your perspective, how do you feel like the stats on mental health care are going to catch up with what's happening to all of our emotional states during this bizarre and uncertain and scary time?
Yeah, so we need a couple hours on that one. But, you know, we know pre-pandemic, you know, about 20% on average of people have anxiety problems. And we know now from our research is when you ask people, you know, how are you feeling? Whether you're a teacher, a parent, or a CEO of a company, anxiety is the number one word. For kids, it's a little bit more all over the place, from frustrated to bored to overwhelmed to scared to anxious. And so the mental health data, you know, show that anywhere between 3 and 8 times more anxiety than pre-COVID.
Wow.
And so that's serious. And so not only do we have, you know, a crisis around racism, a crisis around, you know, a virus, but we also have a mental health crisis now.
I wonder if we can talk briefly for just a moment about emotional intelligence overall.
Sure.
Right? Because how on earth did you find yourself leading an institute devoted to emotional intelligence at a revered Ivy League institution? Mm-hmm. I can say that as a byproduct of Brown University myself. That is not an easy crowd to convince the importance of talking about feelings with. So you've really set yourself up here. I wonder if we can back up and say, how did you find yourself in that position, and what is emotional intelligence really?
Well, you know, how I ended up here is, you know, a 30-year journey, I think. And, you know, tough childhood, as you know, from even the opening of my book, I was abused as a child. And had a lot of bullying in my childhood. I was blessed to have an uncle who happened to be interested in feelings, who happened to be a teacher, who happened to be writing a curriculum to teach kids about feelings through history, who happened to be going to graduate school in the hometown where I was. And he just sat with me oftentimes as I was a teenager, just talking about my feelings and asking me about what caused them. And I argue that he was the first adult to give me the permission to feel, right? The title of my book. And I think so many of us don't have that permission. You know, we go through life suppressing, denying, ignoring, or yelling and screaming and acting out because we don't feel that we can be our true, authentic feeling selves. And that, you know, interaction in my early childhood with my uncle led me to pursue psychology, get a doctorate in emotional intelligence. And so, lo and behold, I came to Yale about 18 years ago as a postdoc with the now president of Yale, Peter Salovey. And so I was very lucky to get that position with him. And then over the last 20 years, you know, turn that into a professorship and then open the center. And so I feel very blessed. You know, if you looked at my childhood and in my experiences, you'd say, like, I don't see how this guy's going to end up being a professor of emotional intelligence.
Well, it's a good reminder of the power of actually working through emotions and how much of a difference that can really make. I wonder if you could tell me more about the value of emotional intelligence, especially in a hyper-stressed, hyper-productive world where a lot of families right now are just struggling to take care of our basic human needs and put food on the table. Why should we care about talking about our feelings, and what does it even really mean to be emotionally intelligent?
A, you got to give yourself and other people the permission to have all their feelings. And I just think that's unique because we are brought up thinking that there are good emotions and there are bad emotions, right? Happy, contentment, good, anger, anxiety, depression, sad, bad. And so to everyone listening, that is a fallacy. You know, I'm a guy with anxiety. I've had anxiety from as far back as I can remember, and I've done just fine. I have healthy relationships. I run a center. But I've learned strategies on how to use my anxiety wisely. And so that's what emotional intelligence is. It's developing the skills to learn how to use all of your emotions wisely. And so then you might say, well, what's the pathway? Well, the first is what I call becoming an emotion scientist. And so you got to be curious and open and reflective about your own and other people's feelings. You got to have a growth mindset around this. Like, I always ask people during these times, how many of you have failed at regulating your emotions with your family or at work, you know, over the last couple of months? Did you have that experience at all?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I was not my best self accessing my wise mind at all times.
I mean, I can name, you know, 300 times where I'm like, Mark, come on, don't say it. And then I just say it, right? And I'm like, I cannot believe I just said that. Or don't do it, don't do it. And then I do it. That means that we have to have a growth mindset around the acquisition of these skills, meaning because we're going to fail horrifically. No one expect to be living in quarantine with their family full-time, working and being at home, and list goes on. And so just be open to the experience and understand you're going to fail and just have an attitude that, you know what? I failed today. I'm going to do better tomorrow.
Right. And seeing that as part of an evolution that we can actually practice. I think I read on your blog at markbrackett.com a relatively recent piece on being our best self during challenging times, which really hit home for me. And you talk about this strategy in your book as well. Tell us a little bit about what meta moments are and how we can all be calling upon them during these hard times.
Sure. So let me jump first to the skills and then we'll pull them into the meta moment.
Perfect.
So, right, you give yourself permission to feel, you become an emotion scientist because you know that emotions are information, right? They help you make better decisions. They help you become more, you know, engaged in relationships. They help you with your mental health. They help you with your creativity and your performance. Like, we know that already. You got to just believe us. And whenever people will be like, you know, I don't know, like this fluffy feeling stuff, I'm like, just read chapter 2.
Yeah.
I got more research in there than you could ever read in terms of why emotions matter. Like, you, it's not, it's like, you may have an opinion, which is fine, but it has nothing to do with science. And so then it's about learning the skills. And that's why we have this method that we call RULER. Recognizing emotions in self and others, like really identifying, how am I feeling? How are you feeling? Understanding emotions, like, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? What's the difference between anger and disappointment? Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot for that, but, you know, most people get it wrong. People don't know that anger is about injustice and disappointment is about unmet expectations.
It's a great difference to clarify for folks. I definitely hadn't realized that before you illuminated that for me in the book.
Or the difference between anxiety and stress and fear and pressure.
Right.
I mean, I give you a harder one now. But so, like, stress, right, is about too many demands, not enough resources. Mm. Anxiety is about uncertainty. Fear is about danger. Mm. And it really matters to get granular so that you can label your feelings accurately. And that way you're communicating exactly what's going on for you. Because if you can't communicate your true inner experience, then it's hard to know what to do with your feelings.
Right.
Expressing and regulating emotions is the last two skills. So recognize, understand, label. Expressing has to do with knowing how and when to express emotions. And I know, you know, that you work with, you know, in workplaces a lot. And so there's a lot of power issues in the workplace about who gets to express emotions. Mm. People of greater power have greater permission, per se, to express whatever they want to feel.
Sure.
Gender differences in terms of what's acceptable, quote unquote, or not acceptable, you know, in terms of expressing. there's racial differences in expression, right? People of certain races have greater privilege in expressing anger than in other races. Mm-hmm. Really just the basic example is, you know, white guys like myself can express anger in the workplace with very different repercussions than a black man can. That goes as early as kindergarten and preschool, by the way.
Wow.
Black children are suspended for less severe infractions than white children in preschools. And then there's the last skill of regulating emotion, like the strategies that we use to manage our own emotions and help people to manage theirs. And honestly, over the last couple of months, I think I spent more time doing webinars and trainings in emotion regulation than I have in my entire career because, you know, I had a father reach out to me and he goes, Mark, I'm a father. I'm a lawyer. I am my son's teacher. I'm also the tech coordinator for the school now. I'm the cafeteria worker. Like, I'm doing everything. And he's like, you know, how am I supposed to survive? And right. I remember saying to him, like, take it from a different lens. Just think of how creative you are and how talented you are. He didn't appreciate that one, but anyway.
Well, I have a lot of questions about the ruler process because even the very first one of recognizing came up for me in a workshop I did today with a series of international education, higher education professionals who clearly are working in a stressful environment now with higher ed full of uncertainty, with global travel suspended. That's really where they their work intersects. And a gentleman asked after we talked through coping strategies for stress management, he said, why is it so hard for me to tell when I am stressed? Because I don't have that first ability to really recognize what the feelings are that I'm experiencing.
Interesting.
And I wonder if it's partly related to how we condition men versus women or boys and girls to either talk about our feelings or not talk about our feelings. My husband, Brad, is very much a utilitarian when it comes to feelings. And he was raised to say, or to really think, well, I'm not going to bring this up, this negative emotion up, unless there's a good reason to. And so I just wonder for folks listening who are like, I know I'm feeling some feelings right now because regulation is not going so well and I'm snapping at people maybe I don't mean to snap at, but I'm having trouble identifying if it's anxiety or stress or disappointment or grief. What do you think's behind that?
Well, I think it goes back to everything that we've been talking about in terms of we deny ourselves the permission to feel. And in doing so, you know, it builds up like a debt.
Mm.
And saddens me, you know, that, you know, the adults who were raising us and teaching us didn't give us the permission to feel in many instances because they didn't have the permission themselves.
Right.
And so like my mother was a wonderful woman. You know, if I have anxiety, she had five times the amount of anxiety I have, but she didn't know how to cope at all with her anxiety. So she would say things like, don't tell me everything that's happening. I'm going to have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
That was when I was a kid. And I remember thinking to myself, you're having a breakdown. Like, I'm the one being bullied, by the way.
Right.
And then my father was the opposite. He had a tremendous amount of anger, but also was very much about toughening up because he was like a tough guy from the Bronx, New York. And so he'd say, son, you got to toughen up. Now, the truth is, as I speak to you now as a 51-year-old professor, I also have a fifth degree black belt. I'm not a tough guy. Like, I don't even know what it is. Like, what is a tough, like John Wayne, is that a tough guy? Like, what is that?
Yeah.
And so like, we have all these mindsets about like your husband may have, or others may have that, you know, sorry to pick on your husband now, but, you know, like I'm a successful business person. Like I can't be seen as having anxiety or being stressed out because the reason why is people will think I'm weak. And to me, that's the sad story also, is that we equate these strong, unpleasant feelings like anxiety and fear and stress with being weak.
I think there is that perception issue. And I think there's a burden fear as well. This, I don't want to be a burden to someone else. I should be able to handle this on my own, which is antithetical to you know, talk therapy and just
antithetical to the way we're wired as human beings.
Yeah.
You know, my friend here, you know, we talk about this, like, think about the message for that, for a child, mm-hmm. right, who's being bullied or abused, God forbid. And they're brought up by a parent who thinks it's a burden for them to share their feelings.
Right.
What do you think of the repercussions there?
Yeah.
Or what do you think it is for a couple mm-hmm. who's been together for how many years, but they haven't really talked about how they really feel because they're afraid of how their partner might respond to their feelings. Mm. And so you live this weird fake life.
Yeah. I think a lot of people live that way. Don't
you? I think so. I meet a lot of people that feel that way. They all send me emails asking me.
I always am a little suspicious of folks until they level with me with some sort of vulnerability. I'm like, are you just living a fake life this whole time? I think social media has perpetuated that problem for what it's worth. But Brad and I joke when we first met, there's a little John Mulaney stand-up bit about dating Jewish women. I don't know if you've mm-hmm. seen this, but my father's Jewish and I've inherited from my familial heritage the great tradition of kvetching. And John Mulaney, right, John Mulaney being Irish Catholic, says, when I was dating non-Jewish women, it would be like, what's the matter? And she'd go, you wouldn't understand. And he's like, what am I supposed to do with that? Now that I'm dating, and he eventually married this Jewish woman, you know, I know exactly how she's feeling. She walks in the door and says, my stomach hurts. My back is not straight. And I'm having a terrible day. What's your day been like? And we joke that that's sort of the evolution of our relationship one another. I just wonder.
I don't say, like, I'm tired, I'm bloated, I'm irritable, I'm overwhelmed, I'm stressed. Anything else you want to know?
And so finding the balance, I think, of expressing and regulating, right, which are important.
But the thing is here, you have to get at what the theme is here, right? And we have to really unpack it, which is that expressing means letting it all hang out. Mm. And that's not what expressing is. It's about discerning the right time, the right place, and how much to share.
Right.
But if you realize that you feel inhibited in sharing, that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
Right. You can't be in a relationship where you don't feel like if it's important to you,
right,
that you can express how you're feeling.
Yeah. And I think those are different relationships call for different regulation or a different calculation internally in terms of when is it safe to be vulnerable. Hopefully it's safe for us to be vulnerable with our teams, but we know that psychological safety in workplaces is not a guarantee. So my final question for you here is, given the massive uncertainty we're all navigating right now and how much anxiety that's provoking for everyone, what kind of emotional intelligence do you want to see more people bringing to work? And what would that call to action be for leaders, especially in creating safe and brave spaces for folks to show up vulnerably, imperfectly, and emotionally at work?
So two things, going back to that meta moment that I want to unpack for you in a minute, is that we do have to try to show up as our best selves. So for me, you know, my mother-in-law was living with us for a while, like 6 months. My partner's from Panama, and we had a hard time getting her back to Panama because of COVID.
Yeah.
And after like a month, it was like, fine, you know, Abuelita's here. And then, you know, 5 months, we're like, all right, like, do I look at you in the hallway? Do we have to have dinner together? Like, because we're not going to, like, we want to eat different things and we have different rules around salt and sugar. I mean, I'm Jewish too, so you know what I'm talking about.
That's so great. And yeah. So
the joke, you know, it was like, all right, Mark, you're the director of the Center for Emotional Intelligence. How would that person respond? How is that person going to show up for dinner? Mm. And what I liked about that model and what shows in our research is that by activating that best self, like the person you want to be seen as, the person you want to be experienced, like the person, you know, how you want to be talked about, and just pausing and think like, how do I want to be seen? How do I want to be talked about? How do I want to be experienced right now? Be true. That doing that exercise helps you to show up and be, you know, more resilient, kinder, more compassionate, and the list goes on.
Right. And that can just be a breath, right? That can just be taking a breath, thinking about the intention behind what I'm about to say before I say it, which has been a weakness of mine, but a skill that is hard to develop, but is important.
It's hard to do it in the moment. That's why it's good to be a preventionist, as I call them. Mm. So that means like you secretly have these words like, you know, by your bedstand or by the mirror in the bathroom. And you're like, all right, as a mom, as a husband, as a wife, as a whoever, I want to be kind, compassionate, caring, patient, loving. And you just look at that before you go down to breakfast as a way to prime you to be in that place.
I love that.
The second thing I would just say is that you should not only want to know how people are feeling, but know how they like to feel, how they hope to feel, because that's going to be an indication of what might be missing in the workplace. So if I did this, you know, I've done this many times with different companies, and people will say, I want to feel more respected. I want to feel heard. I want to feel valued, appreciated, or I want to be empowered, or I want to feel inspired. And just listening as a leader to what people are saying they want to feel, and then finding out what is needed in that organization to make those feelings become a reality. Because emotions are driving productivity in the workplace. And if people aren't feeling the emotions that they want to feel, like respected and heard and valued, they're spending 50% of their day on social media instead of working. They're gossiping more than you want them to, and they're looking for another job in their spare time.
And they're stealing the Post-its on the way out the door. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's not a good return on investment.
They engage in more unethical behavior.
It's interesting because I think the innate response from far too many leaders, and this is so human too, is defensiveness. When we hear from our employees, I want to feel more respected. And you're like, what do you mean? Isn't that what the salary is for? Isn't that what this retreat was all about? And what that tells us really is, instead of trying to disagree with someone else's emotional state, how can I validate it and then internalize it as an indication, as you mentioned, for what is actually missing and how I can bridge that gap? But that requires getting beyond defensiveness and arguing with someone's feelings, right?
It just, you know, if you want to take emotions seriously at home, at school, in the workplace, you got to make time to process them. You got to learn the skills. You got to take these meta moments. It's got to be integrated, or as I say, it's got to be infused into the way leaders lead, people work, the way we hire, you know, the way we schedule breaks. Like, it just has to be in the ethos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if done right, I think even amidst a crisis, when there are bottom line concerns, the return on investment of trust, of loyalty, of people who feel included is pretty significant.
Well, you need this more now than ever before. And as I say, always, you know, if you're on vacation, chilling out, life is good, there's no virus, everybody's getting along. Like, honestly, like, who cares if you have emotional intelligence? But
yeah,
it's when someone kicks the sand in your face.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm activated. This is when our true emotional selves comes out oftentimes. And that's when we have to rely on that set of skills.
Yeah. I've used this analogy where I feel like when we here at Bossed Up, which is a very small business, 3 full-time employees, we've just brought on 3 part-time employees recently. But, you know, when we felt backed into a corner as a small business, the proudest moment for me was realizing that in the face of significant hardship, like, how are we going to exist in 6 months? My team and I felt like Charlie's Angels backing into each other's backs, you know, ready to tackle the threat as a team. And to me, you know, being able to honestly say that I feel like this global pandemic and economic crisis has brought my team and I together is not something I thought I'd be able to say. And that I think is my proudest achievement for still being kicking, you know, as a small business owner.
Cool.
Thank you so much for sharing your expertise. Tell us where folks who want to learn more about Permission to Feel, your fantastic book, your writing, your work, can catch up and keep up with you.
Sure. So I think my website is the best place, and that's just my name, Mark with a C, M-A-R-C, bracket, bracket.com. And there you can find all sorts of things like my book, my blog. You can learn about our company, OG Life Lab, which is about teaching emotional intelligence to people in the workplace. It's a digital learning systems tool, and about our work in schools. And so I've got everything there, and you can just go there and dive in and pick what interests you.
Awesome, Mark. Thanks so much. I'll include that link in today's show notes. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
To get links to all of the resources we mentioned today, head to bossedup.org/episode323. That's bossedup.org/episode323. And now it's time for this week's Boss Move of the Week. I don't know why. I feel like we need a transition there that's like music, not sung by me poorly every other week when I feel like it, but like an actual little jingle. Who's a jingle maker who listens to this podcast? Reach out to me. I want to write a jingle together for this. Let's bring that transition into this next chapter of the podcast. All right. Here's our boss move of the week from Sarah, who wrote the following in the Bossed Up Courage community. Hello, I'm just dying to share. I landed a new position within my current company, and I'm receiving a 10% pay raise, which is more than I asked for when I applied. Yes, please. And now I'm just waiting for my official letter from HR with my start date. I'm so excited. Congratulations, Sarah. That's so exciting. You know, it's interesting navigating an inter-company promotion slash like job search is not an easy feat. It's something I worked on with a really fantastic client of ours, AJ, who works for a global pharmaceutical company. And last year she joined Hired, our job search program, our job search accelerator. And I worked with her in Hired to really like basically get her application materials together to apply for a new position within her company. Then they had a company-wide hiring freeze as a result of COVID. So she jumped into Level Up, our leadership accelerator, where we helped her really refine her management and leadership skills. And she ended up getting tapped for a new job with tons more responsibility. I'm talking global responsibility because of COVID, quite frankly, and because she's excellent at what she does. And so she was able to parlay this like pseudo job search meets promotion quest into leveling up in a huge way over the past year. So this stuff is being done. And like, it's just a good reminder when you hear boss moves like this, that it doesn't just happen. You have to like intentionally put in the effort to make those things happen. And people are making them happen every day, even in an uncertain economy. So if you are feeling frustrated and not sure how to get to the next level, you're not alone and you don't have to go it alone. You know, if you want to check out Level Up, that would be a great next step at bossedup.org/levelup, or hop on a chat, hop on a call with me or Kirby or a member of our team at bossedup.org/letschat to learn more. Congrats, Sarah. Thank you for sharing this boss move. You never know who you're inspiring when you share your come up story. So I appreciate that. All right, y'all, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Mark Brackett. Let me know what you think. The conversation always continues over in the Bossed Up Courage community, so join me there if you haven't already. And in the meantime, let's keep bossing in pursuit of our purpose, and together, let's lift as we climb. Let's face it, speaking up at work can be really hard to do, especially for women and women of color. When the stakes are high and you've already worked so hard to just be the only woman in the room, and you want to get everything right, you want to have all your facts and figures accurate before making your voice heard, it's just so much easier to stay silent instead. Researcher Deb Chahansky calls this loss of voice phenomenon. And it actually emerges in adolescent women at greater rates than men, and it sticks with us for the rest of our lives. Self-silencing behavior can actually become an unconscious habit unless we consciously engage in practicing our assertive communication skills. And we here at Bossed Up have set out to help women like you do just that. Speak Up, my live assertive communication course, is back open for enrollment, and we're kicking off a new cohort launching this June. Over the course of 8 life-changing weeks, you'll have access to interactive online curriculum and live weekly practice sessions where you, Irene, and I, and a cohort of fellow Speak Up bosses who are owning their voice, overcoming the social messages that have taught us to keep silent, and really learning to strategically and assertively communicate when it matters most, will actually have the practice time to rewire our brains, create new neural pathways, and build better habits when it comes to speaking up with confidence and precision and assertively communicating in the workplace. Learn more and enroll today to secure your spot at bossedup.org/speakup. That's bossedup.org/speakup.